60 minutes on yourself and pause to think about your own career. My name is Gwen Wilcox and I am the CEO of Armstrong Wolf. If you are new to Armstrong Wolf, we are a global CEO advisory firm. We serve the CEO community with forums and content 100% targeted to support their CEO mandate. So part of our work, we promote the cause of diversity, equity, and inclusion through the Women in the CEO Community Network that you are part of, by leveraging the female executives and male executives, and also underrepresented groups of the global CEO community. So this is our purpose. Our ambition is to professionalize the role of the COO and encourage all talent in financial services to consider the CEO role as possibly a career choice. We do this through multiple forums and activities and provide you with career management series to support you on this journey, if this is indeed what you wish to do. This community is all inclusive, irrelevant of gender and indeed seniority. So today's forum is one of four webinars on guiding principles, I guess, on how to manage and advance your CEO career. So we have two very special guests with us today. Both have accepted to share their experiences. Please feel free to pop any questions in the chat as we go along for them or for Mia, our executive coach here, who is also going to present to us today. Remember, this is time for you. So I do highly encourage all of you to use the chat facility or raise your hand if you wanted to ask a question. So I think today's presentation is common sense, but whilst the biggest challenge we have seen is the widely different interpretations of what a CEO function actually does and what it should now be accountable for, I suppose, one aspect to note is that the evolutionary model of the CEO office is evolving, and this is why now is a great opportunity to view the CEO role as possibly a career choice. So we're giving you today an opportunity to hear from a career coach and really talking about your goals. So hopefully Mia, Mia will be talking about this, which is really defining your goals, your actions, identifying your competencies, what are the effective communication tools that you can use to obviously reach a successful career. I'm really pleased to welcome you today, Mia. Mia is our head of career management practice in Asia Pac. So if you don't know Mia, please try and get hold of her after this meeting, because she has a wealth of knowledge and hopefully will be able to support you on your career journey. Mia, hello, how are you doing this morning?
I'm really well, thank you.
I'm also honored to welcome Carrie Fong, who's the Managing Director and Chief Operating Officer in Asia Pacific for TD Securities. Good afternoon.
Hi, Gwen, thanks for having me.
And hello, John Curry. You are the Managing Director, Regional Head, Operations, IT and Client Onboarding as part of your title for Asia Pacific. You are working for Scotiabank. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Gwen, again, thanks for having me.
If I can both leave you at this stage, Carrie and John, to just give us an introduction of who you are, where you are now, and a short introduction of your career to date, please.
Shall I go first?
Yes, please, Carrie.
Hi, everyone. I'm Carrie Fong, as Gwen has said. I am currently the COO of TD Securities here in Asia, but I have been with TD for about 18 years, and I have worked in a number of our offices, starting in Toronto. I spent some time in Asia and also in our European offices as well. My journey has been quite random, if you ask me. It's I'm here today, ironically, to speak about career management, but I don't think I've ever had in my mind this was where I was going to end up, nor did I think I was going to get here. Interestingly, I did have a point in my career where I said, well, what if I wanted to be COO? And I had a couple of people say to me, no, I don't think that that's for you, and not quite sure that you can make it. But you know what? That's part of the journey. And I'm here now. So I've been fortunate enough to have spent this much time with TD, having done so many different things. And I'm excited to share my journey with you today.
Thank you, Carrie. And welcome to you. Over to you, John.
Thank you. I work with Scotiabank. I look after operations, IT, and client onboarding here, based in Singapore, like Carrie. I've been with Scotia about 4 years now. Prior to that, I was with Barcap for about 7 years. Prior to that, Lloyds Banking Group, Bank of Scotland, etc. So history probably rings very true with what Carrie said about planned versus unplanned. I think I've taken advantage of a few opportunities that have been put my way. Many, many years ago, I sort of landed into a team leadership role and kind of thought, this is what I enjoy doing. So I've done various different leadership activities, but they all kind of revolve around that kind of people management, which I think is the bit that I enjoy most and hopefully is my sweet spot as well. So again, like Carrie, very keen to share today and very privileged to be asked to come along. So thank you again.
And welcome to you too. And we look forward to hearing from both of you a bit later. Over to you, Mia. I'd love to hear a bit about your career as well. And then we can get started with the presentation.
Excellent. Thank you, Gwen. Yes, I am an executive and career coach, as well as a leadership and team effectiveness facilitator. This is my third career. I did spend nearly 20 years in financial services prior to, and most of that was with Standard Chartered Bank, and most of that here in based in Singapore as well. I even in the banking world, I had two quite distinct careers. The first one, about 10, 11 years, I spent in wholesale banking, various different roles ranging from client-facing relationship management to headquarter roles in business strategy and client service improvements globally. I then had some people might call an early midlife crisis. To me, it was more of an epiphany. I realized that my passion really lied with developing people. And so I spent another 8 years in HR, completely pivoting my career away from business and into people development. I held roles in learning and talent management. And my last role was looking after talent in technology and operations globally. Everyone from young graduate students who came into the bank, making sure that we set them up for success, to mid-career talent, and particularly ensuring we had diverse talent pools in technology, as well as then Group CIO and his management committee, making sure that we had succession readiness for the senior most leadership positions in the bank. I then left corporate life about 6.5 years ago to pursue my passion for people, for developing leaders and progressing careers in a slightly more flexible way, as my daughter left for uni as well. And I've been with Armstrong Wolf about 5 years now, looking after the women in the COO community, as well as the career management here in Asia. So let's get on to the next slide, please. Yes, so this webinar, as Gwen mentioned earlier, is second in a series looking into career management. And what Carrie shared with us earlier kind of resonated with me as well. Many of us, like me in earlier in my career, have navigated our careers with very little thought to kind of what's next. We've just been able to climb the corporate ladder. Perhaps opportunities have risen and we've taken advantage of them. Maybe there were some kind people who have taken some risks on us as well. But often there comes a point in our careers when we want to and perhaps even need to, are forced to, take a more proactive approach to our careers and to really think about and really kind of pause and think about with a very sort of, conscious effort. What is it that we want to happen next? What's the direction of travel? And it may be at a junction where we feel that we are stuck in our careers. It may be because what we're doing isn't feeling as fulfilling anymore. Maybe we're getting a bit bored. Or it may be related to some other life circumstances around family and family decisions or making decisions about location, etc. And in our series, we look at some of the key steps that will help you plan your career and really unlock your potential. And today, we'll start with self-awareness, which often is one of the barriers. We don't actually spend an awful lot of time on that. So let's take a look at the next slide. Those of you who have who attended the first webinar back in February might recognize this. This essentially lays out the key elements that go into career planning. And today we'll focus on the first two on top, really kind of building our self-awareness, thinking about our personal qualities, our values, our personality and interests. And just like any strategy, our career management strategy really starts with a destination in mind. So where do you want to get to? Thinking about that overall goal. And perhaps you want to become a COO. Perhaps you are already in a chief operating officer role and you would like to get into a bigger, maybe a regional or a global COO role. Whatever your aspiration, your destination is, the starting point is mapping out where you are today and really building on the awareness of not just of your skills, your knowledge and experience, but also your motivations, your interests, personality, and your purpose. So let's take a look at the next slide, please. Purpose. Now, in deciding where you want to go, perhaps the bigger question and the more tricky question, I guess, is to answer what's your purpose. Now, if I did a poll right now and asked how many of you are really clear on what your purpose is, what were you put on this planet to do and achieve, some of you probably would say, yep, I know what it is. And I would venture a guess that many of us would have no idea, or we would have an idea, but it hasn't really been something that we're focused on. That's fine. It takes self-awareness. It takes reflection. Some people, I have a lot of coaching clients, career coaching clients, with whom we might spend several sessions just kind of trying to unlock this. Also, an interesting point is that your purpose can change over time. It's often linked to your core values and the vision that you have for yourself. And it doesn't have to be really grand and altruistic. I remember a period in my life when I'm a single parent, when my daughter was quite young. As a single parent, I felt very strongly that my purpose was just to put food on the table and to be able to earn enough money to pay for my daughter's education here in Singapore. However, at its best, our purpose can give us a sense of fulfillment. It can be a sort of a North Star guiding us. I think it was Mark Twain who said originally that if you find a job that you love, you'll never work a day in your life. And to me, that is the ultimate of if you get to do something that feels like you're fulfilling your passion, you are in a flow. Let's take a look at the next slide. I think this might resonate with people, particularly here with our Asian audiences. One way to define or interpret your purpose is through the Japanese concept of ikigai. So iki meaning life or being alive, and gai meaning benefit or worth or value. It's not that dissimilar from the French term for reason, for being. Basically, if you can find that sweet spot where you are doing something that you love, something that the world needs, you're good at it, and on top of that, you can get paid for it, that really it can give a completely different kind of energy to your career. I feel very strong, fortunate actually, that I feel strongly that in coaching and facilitation, I have found my sweet spot here. Okay, let's go into the next slide then. Okay, so don't worry if you haven't figured out your purpose yet. Let's start with who you are today. Okay, and this really is less about the role or the title that you have, and much more about the why you do what you do, and in other words, or how you do it. So the way that you show up in this world, and the things that motivate you, that drive you. So how you contribute, these are some of the questions that I would ask my coaching clients, or you might ask yourself. How do I contribute to the organization? How do I contribute to the relationships that I have at work? And what is it that I do to add value? And what do my colleagues perhaps value in me? And then when you go to the why side, it's really about my motivations, your personal values, your how they match with the organization's personal values, and what's really truly important and meaningful to you. And this is where I'm going to invite our two guest COOs to contribute. I'm going to pose a couple of these questions for you. It would be really lovely to hear from you where you are today. So Carrie, John, could I invite either of you to start with? What do your colleagues value in you?
Let me go first this time, because Carrie started off. I was reflecting on this question. I think one thing I've been told people like in the past is calmness. I think, you know, when you're in a position where quite often problems may be brought to you, you know, if there's a happy path and everything's working well, you know, those problems maybe don't come. But when you're particularly my role, head of operations, head of IT, when things don't go according to how they should, then maybe you need to step in, escalations happen, etc. And the reason I say calmness is because quite often, you know, in the heat of something going wrong, whatever process that might be, people are sometimes concerned about that. And, you know, a client is impacted or funding is impacted or something is going to be impacted that people don't want that outcome to happen. And I think, you know, bringing a sense of calm. So, you know, I once heard a phrase saying you cast a shadow for those around you. The last thing you want people to do when something's gone wrong is, you know, add to that concern or add to that, I guess, emotional problems that people have. Therefore, if you're able to, you know, very calmly say, you know, what's the problem? What should have happened? What did have happened? How do we correct it? How do we stop it happening next time? And then be able to kind of summarize all the various points of view that you might have heard with different people's views. So for me, it's about retaining that sense of calm, even if inside you're concerned about what's happened and you might on the inside feel that. But I think being able to display that sense of calmness and just keep people focused on the task is something that I both try and do, and I've certainly had reflected back in the past that you know, you need to remain calm. And without quoting too much poetry, the Rudyard Kipling, if, you know, so if you can keep your head whilst all around you're losing theirs. I'm not saying for a minute that people lose their head, but it's almost that sentiment that I try and create. So we just keep things calm.
Lovely. Thank you, John. Carrie, what do your colleagues value in you?
I think for me, if you were to ask those that I work with, I think they would describe me as the trusted partner, and I'm transparent with all the things that I do. My experience has taken me through a number of countries. I've worked on the trading floor for most of my career, and I do get very involved with the detail. And having been brought into this role, I think I bring it all together. I'm also very honest with when things go wrong. If we did something wrong, I'm very much not about, well, let's find the person to blame. It's more about, let's just fix the problem now at hand, and we'll work on the recovery or whatever the plans are for the future together. And I think by being able to bring that all together, people are assured that, you know, if there is a problem, we'll fix it. And there's really no one left behind or hung out to dry if there was a severe problem. I do also think that, you know, having relationships for our global partners also makes a very big difference in playing this role and being able to bring all the different groups together as well.
Yeah, lovely. So what I'm hearing from both of you is kind of building some or giving some assurance to your teams. Kind of there's a lovely sort of a theme there. What about then, what motivates you? What motivates you to succeed? What motivates you to do your best in the role?
For me, I'm mostly motivated by learning. I think having to go through the many problems, it seems like there's more problems than there are positive things sometimes. I think that learning drives me to keep going. I want to solve everyone's problem if I can. And I like to get involved. I like to build those relationships. And I think it's really important to build that foundation for our organization. So that drives me to keep going. I also love a good underdog story, right? I love being the one where, you know, you don't really know what's going to happen next, but you come through. So I think it's a very positive spin on things that are happening around us today.
Lovely.
Yeah, I'd loved it. I'd love to echo the learning point, Carrie. The day that the day we don't learn anything is the day to hang up our boots. You know, once that stops, there's almost no purpose. The thing that that really motivates me and I always love seeing is just seeing people develop. You know, and particularly in the world that Carrie and I live in, you will employ some people right at the very start of their career. And I think it's maybe it's slightly paternal, but I love seeing when, you know, a fresh young grad comes in very. Very raw, you know, some great qualifications, but very little experience, and just see them grow through their career. And when you can have a handle on that through line management or through mentorship or through even just general counsel and advice, and when you can be part of that person's journey, it's hugely motivating when you see them succeed and be promoted and move from role to role. So that really ticks spots for me.
Lovely. I hear a lot of commonality there too, yes. The learning, for me personally, developing people obviously resonates very much. Lovely. Thank you. Thank you both. So besides some of these questions, well, on the next slide, we have a couple of more questions. And if these look a little bit like interview questions, you're right. No harm in sort of thinking through and preparing to answer some questions that allow us to demonstrate how we add value and what our experience is. So these would be some of the typical interview questions that I would prepare my coaching clients, for instance, before they embark on looking for opportunities to practice. And I love the first question. I think it's kind of a going back to the what have you learned and how have you grown in the role. What is different about you now from when you were first appointed to your current role? What have you learned? What has been difficult? What have you enjoyed? And perhaps what have you not enjoyed as much? And I'd love to invite both John and Carrie to actually give their answers to this question, if I may. Who would like to start?
I'll start. John, going back to your comment about being calm, I think the way that I've developed from where I was to where I am now, I am very much the fire. And I think that's why people were happy that I had taken on this role, because, you know, when something does happen, I really take it and I own it. And it's that fire to make sure that something is done. And sometimes you have to be a bit aggressive to get the outcome that you need or to fix the problem at hand. But where I've changed over time is the ability to take that fire and bring along others to drive resolution and to make sure that we all end up in the same place, yet with that bit of maturity and not flying off the handle like I could have done in the past and probably did very often. But being able to channel that and really focus and bring others along to make sure that something does get resolved. And I think that's been the biggest learning point in my career so far, is to take who I used to be, mature that, develop that with the help of others, into bringing in, you know, into this role where I should be. And maybe not where I saw myself 10 years ago, but where I am comfortably right now as well.
Lovely. Thank you. John?
I think for me, the bit that I probably learned both, and I wouldn't say just this role, but probably the previous role, particularly since I moved to Asia almost 10 years ago now, is just the bit that I feel I've really developed. To me, you know, diversity and inclusion, you know, particularly when it comes to Asia, is something I was just aware of in the past. And I think that the huge learning curve for me has been coming here and just understanding just how different all the cultures and races and individuals that are in this region, varying country by country, varying team by team. And I've just found that journey particularly fascinating in how I need to adapt and change my style, whether I'm speaking to my team over in India or my team up in Hong Kong or my team here in Singapore, and just understanding those nuances between. And now I think I've become a real advocate. So when someone from overseas head office or somewhere in the West, we'll see the questions like, you know, what happens in Asia as one country, forgetting that we are, you know, a whole mass of countries, a whole mass of cultures, a whole mass of, you know, experiences. I quite often say to people, you know, do you realize that the flight from Singapore to Tokyo is only 100 miles less than the flight from New York to London? And that really brings people into context about the size of the region, that, you know, India has 47 main languages and 1,500 sub-languages. You know, people just don't know just how diverse Asia is. So, you know, for me, that's been, and I think the learning, therefore, is how much of a role we can play. You know, people like Carrie and I, who work for a Western organization in an Eastern location, how much we can become translators, and you're translating that East to West. And I think that's been a huge learning experience for me. And I think now where you can actually give back, where you're able to bridge that gap East and West and provide that, I don't mean, you know, literal and metaphoric translation service. It's hugely rewarding to be able to do that.
Oh, thank you, John. That really resonates. I'm still learning. I've been based in Singapore for 23 years speak some of the local language and all, but I still find myself learning. The cultural diversity that is here is wonderful, really enjoyable. Okay, excellent. Let's go to the next slide then. In sort of continuing to think about who you are, where you've come from, what experiences and skills do you have that make you unique, we tend to often think of sort of the technical skills, whether they relate to your specific product area or function or business, or we may think of the more common sort of, you know, universal soft skills around communication or influencing people and building relationships. Or we may think of leadership skills in sort of strategic thinking or vision setting and getting people to follow you. But there's actually more to this. When you're developing your self-awareness around your strengths and skills and experience, think about also things like judgment. You know, how do I make decisions? How can I demonstrate how I make decisions? Adaptability in terms of how do I approach change or generally challenges in life? How adaptable am I? And how do I get other people around me to be adaptable? How do I encourage that behavior in others? This wheel and the list here, by no means an exhaustive list of the competencies that are needed in a COO role, but I would venture a guess, John and Kerry, that all of these things will definitely be needed in a COO role. And once you've done an inventory of your own experience so far, you can then start to identify gaps and start thinking about how you might bridge them. And in this process of identifying your sort of skills and capabilities library, you may want to engage some colleagues as well to provide feedback on your skills and think of examples when you've been able to demonstrate them. And this is kind of, again, preparing you for interviews. So think about being able to answer people in a sort of a structured way of what was the context, how you went about it, and what was the result. I know that this sounds very interviewy, but just preparing yourself and thinking through will give you much more insight into who you are and what you have to offer. So many times with my coaching clients, when I start digging deeper and I do some prep interviews, sort of prep interviews with them to get them ready, they discover so much more about themselves, things that they had completely forgotten. You know, sometimes you have 10, 20 years of career history and you can't always remember what you've done and achieved. Okay, let's go to the next slide, please. Motivation. We heard a little bit earlier about Kerry and John sharing what motivates them about that constant learning, problem solving, developing people, etc. There's actually lots of, I guess the key thing here is that each one of us is motivated by different things and our motivations may change over time. I definitely remember that when I was a young keen banker in the city of London in the mid 90s, I wanted to learn a lot and progress quickly. Like achievement and acknowledgement and upward movement were topmost in my mind. Today, I still love to learn. That learning hasn't gone anywhere. To me, personal growth and learning is a huge motivator. But I'm not looking to advance anywhere. In fact, freedom and flexibility have become sort of the forefront for me when it comes to what motivates me today. There are some tools that many of us career coaches use. Edgar Schein has a tool called Career Anchors. That is a very useful one to use. You can probably find it if you want to sort of test your own motivators. You can find it just by Googling it on the internet. Daniel Pink has done a lot of research into this, and he's written a book about motivation in which his sort of research has identified that actually beyond a certain level, money doesn't really motivate people anymore. Once you've got a roof over your head and you've got food on the table and you've got your kids through school and you've maybe got a little bit of money for a car and some travel or holidays, the money stops to be a motivator. And yet that's often the thing that we dangle in front of our people when we're trying to get them to, you know, perhaps up their performance is in terms of bonuses and stuff. Really, the three key criteria that Daniel Pink has found out are key motivators for people are autonomy, mastery, and purpose. There it is again. So autonomy in a way of having some say, some decision-making power, being able to take responsibility for own actions. So empowering people to work independently, etc. Mastery, which relates to that continuous growth, becoming better, and then purpose. So let's visit purpose again. We've started with purpose and we're coming full circle again. So here are some reflection exercises or questions to ask yourself if you're not quite sure what your purpose might be. A career coach can also help you with this process. Like I said, I often ask my clients something similar to the very first question here. I ask them to describe to me what they wanted to be when they'd grow up, when they were little. It's amazing how our childhood dream jobs can actually provide an interesting insight into what we enjoy or what is important to us or aligned to our values. So I use sometimes myself as an example here because I remember very clearly as an 8-year-old little girl in Finland that I wanted to be a teacher. Yet when I went to uni, I saw myself as a banker. And yes, I spent 10, 11 years as a banker, but then oddly enough, I found my way back to HR, to learning and development. And today I'm coaching and facilitating workshops. Not exactly a teaching job, but actually not very close. I've kind of feel like I've returned back to something that was a childhood dream. So obviously there's something in there about my personal values, about developing people. There you go. Let's go to the next slide. So purpose. Okay, I know it sounds like such a huge word and often we may get too hung up about it actually. Well, what if I don't know my purpose? Don't worry about it. I think it's not really about having a definitive sort of plan or some time bound, you know, I must reach this by such and such day. I think that if you have an idea of what your purpose might be, it gives you a sort of a flexible tool for guiding or navigating the possibilities around you. I tend to think of it sort of as a North Star. It establishes that general sense of direction, but you can remain flexible. I personally always think that career planning is a little bit like your whole life planning. You can have a plan, but you want to remain open and flexible to the opportunities that arise along the way. And as long as they're kind of taking you into the right direction, I think they'll be really good opportunities to expand your experience and grow as a person. Okay. One more thing that we'll consider is what stage in your life you are. So Kaleidoscope Career Model, this is a model by two professors in United States, researchers and professors, Lisa Miniero and Sherry Sullivan. They came up with this theory back in mid-2000s. Having done research about what influenced women's, particularly women's career models or career advancement. And whilst it is a women's sort of career model, I think many men will also, you know, resonate or find something that applies to them in the model. Basically, their research shows that a very predominant career pattern for women, particularly in their early career, is to be focused on goal achievement and challenge. Definitely applied to me as that young, ambitious banker in mid-90s. I was looking for a job that was stimulating, engaging, steep learning curves and growth, and opportunity for advancement, either upwards or laterally, didn't matter. However, what happens often in mid-career is that women find themselves balancing family and relational demands with their career. And then you start asking questions like, well, if I make this career decision, what's the impact? How will it affect others in my life? And definitely that's what happened to me when in my early 30s, I had my daughter. And I very distinctively remember sort of telling my line manager at that point that I'm happy to stay where I am for a bit now. I put my career advancement in the back burner. And yes, I still moved laterally to keep my growth going, but I wasn't ambitious. I wanted to spend some time with my daughter at home, come home at a decent time. And then when she was off to school at about six, seven years old, I was ready to hit the gas pedal again. And then later in our careers, once we may be freed from some of these, this need to balance, then the questions of authenticity come to the fore. And for many women, this may be an inflection point, perhaps the, you know, empty nesting or some other big decisions in our life. We may decide that actually we want to define our success differently. We may want to align more closely with our personal values, what's important to us, or indeed our purpose. And so we may make some different choices in our career at that point. Now, all throughout, women as well as men have a need for all three elements, challenge, balance, and authenticity. But the reason why these researchers, Maniero and Sullivan, called it kaleidoscope career model, it is just like the kaleidoscope shifting according to the choices and the desires at each life stage. So if any of you have ever played with a kaleidoscope, you get the idea of how the priorities may change. Now, I would love to hear from John and Carrie again. Which stage in your life do you think you are currently? And do you see any of the earlier stages having been slightly different, perhaps? Who's going to start?
I'll start. I definitely think I'm still in that challenge phase. And it's interesting to describe it this way because in my career, I'm certainly happy with where I am. I'm not looking for a change, yet I'm challenged every day by the things that come across my table. Mm-hmm. I'm also very challenged at home. I've got two young children, and I think I do it to myself, but I wish to be part of everything they do, no matter how busy it is at work. And there are times where I just say, work will have to wait. And for the most part, everybody at work is very supportive of that. I think COVID has played a very large role in that as well, because we're at home, we're with our families, maybe a little bit too much these days, but we do have that flexibility. And so I think even though I'm satisfied with where I am, I find that challenge in everything I do. I've also gone through a recent change in our family life where my partner has decided, also a banker, has decided that he doesn't want to do it anymore. And this stage in my life, we were thinking, am I ready for that? Can we be a single family, a single income family? And you know what? Didn't really matter because he was absolutely miserable in what he was doing. And so the win for the family is to say, let's get rid of that challenge on your side and let's be happy in what it is that you're doing. You can pursue something different. And I'll create that stability for our family here with my role. And I think it kind of changes things as you go along, but it's definitely balance all the way through.
Fantastic. Thank you, Kerry.
Yeah, I can actually sometimes see all three happening in 1 week. You know, maybe not one day, but certainly 1 week where your personal life versus your business life versus whatever you're doing is changing. But one bit, Mila, that you know was very deliberate on both these for me when my kids were very young, and I'm going to give my age away now to say they're now not so young. They're now at university age, so I'm not going to date myself quite so specifically. But I remember when my two were at that kind of nursery age, my partner at the time was a management consultant and doing a lot of travel. And I did almost every pick up and drop off. And that definitely forced me into some balance at that point in my career, where I wasn't going to be able to do more than kind of 8:30 to 5:30 every day. And I certainly wasn't going to be able to do a lot of travel. So that was a conscious decision at that point, because it worked for the family unit for me to do the drop off and pick up. And, you know, now that I'm living in Singapore, my kids are back home. I treasure the time I had with my kids when they were very young, doing that drop off and pick up and seeing the latest egg carton that had been turned into a fire engine, you know, during nursery, etc. So I love that. And I think and as time changes, you know, probably coming to Scotia was definitely a more fresh challenge time. And, you know, my other half at the moment supported me hugely in coming to Scotia, because that was a huge amount of international travel across to Canada, all around the region, etc. And there wasn't that balance, you know, Friday nights and Sunday nights were packing a suitcase, not going out for beers and all that kind of stuff. So I think that was a real great moment to then challenge myself. Probably in the last year, I flipped back to a bit more balance. Again, as my partner took on a new job last year, and she was, you know, very, very much focused on getting that, then it's a case of supporting each other. So I think, you know, to Carrie's point, family units do support each other very well. And if you discuss that ebb and flow, you know, when I need to do a lot of travel versus my partner, and if you can actually have that discussion in a family unit to try and acknowledge that all members, including the kids, have these ABCs and rotate that on a fairly regular basis. That discussion, I think, can be invaluable in making that work for you, whether it's you and a partner, whether it's you and a family, whether it's just you and an extended family.
Beautifully said. Thank you, John. It's so important that those of us who have a life partner and who have to balance all of that and kids perhaps at home as well, have the opportunity to kind of take turns. What I'm hearing there is kind of, well, you may make some, your spouse or partner may make some different choices now, and then that allows you to make different choices as well. That's really lovely. And whilst I often use this model because it resonates with people, both men and women, but also my own example was very much challenge, balance, authenticity, but it doesn't have to be. People experience this, like you said, it could even feel like all three in 1 week, or definitely not in this order. A very dear friend of mine who's also a leadership developer in a corporate currently, hers went ABC. She started off young after uni as a freelance travel writer, and it was all about authenticity, living her dream life and her values in traveling the world and writing to a travel magazine. Then having children and finding a bit more need for balance, no more traveling, getting a desk-bound job, etc. And now in her late 40s, early 50s, she's all about challenge. She's entered the corporate world and is just really enjoying the thrill and the growth and the steep learning curve. So absolutely can happen. For each one of us, it happens differently. I guess the idea here is to identify where are you now? What is important to you in your life right now? Excellent. Let's take a look at then our next slide, because I think by now we've gone through the process of looking at who we are today, how we add value and why do we do what we do. And we've looked at our purpose, if we can define that. We've looked at our skills and experience. We've We've sort of looked at the stage in which we are in our lives. By now, we should have enough material, enough sort of self-awareness that we'd be able to write down our or articulate our brand statement. This is really about, I think of this as the sort of the 60-second elevator pitch, something that communicates why people really should notice you or consider you for a role or at bare minimum have you in their network. I think it was Jeff Bezos who said your brand is what people say about you when you leave the room. And again, there's lots of tools that you can use to sort of write out or sort of come to it, your brand statement. I love Simon Sinek's video, YouTube video on start with a why. And that's the concept of the golden circle. And talks about how we often introduce ourselves with the what, you know, I am Mia and I'm a coach, rather than starting with the why, I'm passionate about people development, you know. And often our brand is linked to our purpose, but at bare minimum, it's linked to what we value in our lives, what our personal values are, what makes us unique, what specializations do we have. And it is kind of the how people would describe you as well. So I am going to go back to our guest COOs again. I'd love to know, John and Kerry, if you have a brand statement, and if you do, what would that be? Would you share that with us?
I think, so in the spirit, Mila, of still learning, this was educational for me looking at this in terms of what my brand. So I didn't have a brand before you put this slide up. I guess, you know, going on brand, one brand that you hopefully hear the Scottish accent, one brand that I'm very keen on is, you know, Scottish malt whiskey. And if I was to identify with anything, you know, I think about a Scottish malt whiskey. It's something that's enjoyed by many, not all. Some people don't like it. And again, you know, I don't have any illusions in life that everyone's going to like you. But it's something, you know, particularly kind of tour of Scotland, the more you travel around a country like Scotland or anywhere in the world, the more that you develop. And I'd like to think that, you know, like good whiskies, there's different varieties that the more you travel, the richer it makes you. But, you know, it's something that people would enjoy after dinner. And to me, that would be the great success of my brand. If we had a dinner party and people just enjoyed the conversation that you had. I would love to be known for that like a good malt, he's a pleasure to spend time with after a good dinner. But yeah, like I say, not everyone might think that way. Not everyone might like a nice malt whiskey. So that's what came to mind when we talked about brand for me.
Hmm. Lovely. What an interesting take on this. So a well-traveled conversationalist. That's lovely to spend time with. Great. Kerry.
It's funny that you asked this question, Mia. I've gone through a number of coaching and mentoring programs where I've asked the individual to work on their 30-second speech. And I myself have never done it. I've tried to pen it. And in fact, when you sent this through, I went and Googled what are the keywords that you need to throw in there and what should you say to people. And I find it really difficult, actually. So kudos to any of you who have managed to do that. The reason why I find it difficult is, to me, it comes across, it lacks authenticity. If it's practiced, you know, if it's keywords that people are looking for. So for me, it really comes back to, I'm a little bit of a know-it-all, which can be super annoying at times, but I'm very, very much a learn-it-all. And I want to know everything. And it feeds back into itself, my personality, my brand, how I work. And I think for me, it's not 60 seconds, but just those couple of lines pretty much sum it all.
Brilliant. Thank you, Kerry. And thank you for your sort of honesty in saying you neither of you had a brand statement. And you're hitting it right on the spot, Kerry. It should not just be a statement. As much as we can pen it and practice it, it needs to be something that is alive, something that resonates, not just with us, but the people around us, that they would go, yeah, that's who she is, rather than some rehearsed statement of keywords. Absolutely. And that, I guess, is the challenge in creating one. the flip side of the coin is that we have a brand. We all have a brand, whether we know it or not. So if you want to know what your brand is, one other good place to start with is to ask your best friends, people, you know, colleagues, managers, ex-managers, people with whom you have perhaps a long working career together, who have seen you over time and would be able to kind of give valuable inputs into that. I did once an exercise where I asked a couple of my previous managers to say, if there were three adjectives that you would use to describe me, what would those be? And that actually it's interesting, but that sort of threw up some common themes, actually. So I felt quite reassured that I seem to have at least whatever the brand is out there, it's consistent. Okay, excellent. And why is articulating your brand important? Well, it is important in a way that what you put out in your LinkedIn profile or in your CV as your career profile, or when you are networking and meeting with people, or when you are talking about succession planning, for instance, if you're vying for the next role, and your career planning with your manager, that you can kind of articulate the value that you bring to this world. You know, what is it that gets you noticed? In your own words, not as a rehearsed statement. Okay, I think we've come to the end of what we had to cover. There's some additional resources. All of you will be receiving the deck after this webinar today. There's a couple of really good books. Herminia Ibarra has written a book about working identity. Dori Clark talks about pivoting your career and reinventing yourself. Tara Moore's book on playing big is particularly geared towards women and career confidence, etc. We'll make that available to you. Gwen.
Indeed, yes. Thank you for the three of you for your candid explanations. And I think your career path to date has been tremendous. So thank you very much for sharing all of that. We have a question in the chat, which I'm trying to decipher to make sure that we get to the bottom of it. Mia, I think it's probably for you for the last 2 minutes of this call, but I'd like to hear from one of you where we look at how we drive our career, our goals, action from your experiences. Is it something that a particular role like COO, head of IT, etc. would entail? Or is it the scope of responsibilities that would be set as our career goals? So I guess the question is more around, are the responsibility given to you across your career set basically your career moving forward?
And my answer would be that it can be either. So I have clients, coaching clients who come to me and they know exactly what they want to aim for. And then we try to build the stepping stones towards that. But I also have clients who know what they like and what they're good at. And then we look at, well, what kind of roles could you do with that kind of background and that kind of experience? So it doesn't have to always be destination led. It can be building from the ground up and having optionality in there. But the coaching approach and the career planning approach for the two would be slightly different.
Would you agree to that, John, as well?
Yeah, I think what's interesting is, so my background is much more ops than it is tech. And when I was asked to have oversight of the technology team in Asia, my fear was I don't have the domain knowledge. So to Carrie's point, you know, you have to dive into the detail and you will never know everything about your whole domain. But as you dive into more and you know, issues come up, then you learn about that. But I guess I was amazed at how many parallels running a team of people doing operational support work versus running a team of people doing IT support work. There's huge parallels. So actually, when you get more into a leadership role, which I think the CEO role is very much pulling a number of teams together, the overarching leadership of teams of people actually has huge amounts of similarities. And it's not that the success of the job isn't necessarily having the full domain knowledge. The success is knowing which bits of the domain knowledge you need on which days to help the people who do that as their day job to succeed best.
Carrie, anything you would like to add to this?
I think the success of a COO comes from being the generalist. to your point about domain knowledge, you won't. It's impossible for you to know everything. And if we did, we wouldn't have the people below us. So I think the focus really, for me anyway, has been about the people and your support network, really making sure that the people who you bring in to oversee areas like technology or operations, you know, they are the domain specialist and you as a team work together. So a lot of it is people, understanding people, guiding people, leading people through change, and making sure that we have that stability in a robust framework. Less so about me knowing, you know, Python, which I don't.
So thank you for that. Right. So for the last few minutes, I just wanted to say a few words. So first and foremost, I would like to thank our guests, and I also would like to thank you, Mia, for your time in developing this presentation. Really, for me, the summary is around developing your why. If you are looking at a career change or developing into a career as a COO, please develop your why. It's so important to know what drives you, especially when it comes to building your brand. How you tell your story is a big part of that when developing relationships. But above all, I believe you need to remain authentic. Ultimately, you own your career. So keep connected. Your network is key. Find your mentors, possibly, too. Social media, we talked about LinkedIn. Maybe in Asia, it's not as used as it is in other regions. But LinkedIn is actually really, really useful when it comes to keeping the connections alive. I guess it's all about being visible by leveraging your internal and external alumni also is a really good option. And dare I say, regularly review your organization's career portal. You don't know what's around the corner. I hope this was helpful to you. Thank you very much for taking time during your busy day for coming to a career management forum. Obviously, we will have all of these slides available to you post this forum, and it'll be online. I also wanted to let you know that this is obviously one of four. The next one will be around managing your mental health and stress. That's going to be in Q3. And in Q4, we'll have mentorship and management of relationships, what I just said about how you keep your network alive. So hopefully you can join us there. This concludes our forum. Thank you again to our guest and for you for attending this forum. Thank you for your candle as well. I'd like to say that to you, John and Carrie. It's very nice to hear some refreshing thoughts. Very much appreciated. Enjoy the